Good morning and welcome to our podcast. My name is David Pritchard and I'm the head of marketing here at Sintons. I'm joined again today by my colleague Jonathan Tutu, who is a solicitor in the corporate team here at Sintons. And our podcast today, which will last approximately 10 to 15 minutes, is episode 3 of our Understanding Corporate Law podcast series and forms part 2 of the specific assets to be sold. So without any further ado, straight over to Jonathan. Jonathan, good morning and over to you.
Thanks, David. I'm just going to carry on with this from my last podcast in the series. And this time I will be, as David said, focusing on the specific assets in the agreement. I left it speaking around what the actual assets are. And these will be the assets of the business that are to be sold or purchased. And a list of these should be included in the agreement for clarity. There may also be some excluded assets, and a list of these should be also included within the agreement just to provide clarity between the buyer and the seller of exactly what is going to be transacted. In terms of the specific assets, these are usually identified in the schedules or perhaps the clauses of the agreement, and these will be similar but not the same for all businesses and will be highly dependent upon the particular arrangements required for that area of business. I'm going to go down a list of the assets which are normally included in asset purchase agreements with a brief description of what they are. The first one is business information, and this is all information, know-how and techniques which in any way relate to the business, assets or the operations of the business that are to be sold. Second one is the business name. This is the name used by the business. This can be one or multiple names and can be registered intellectual property, or it can be unregistered. There is often quite a lot of weighting which goes along with a business name. So a buyer might want to have that obtained as part of the process so they can keep on providing under that name. The records of the business will also be sold, and these are all records and other storage media containing or relating to business information. And these will naturally be passed on to the buyer on completion, so they have a full financial and legal outlook on everything within the business historically. I would note that there are some parts of the business, such as wider tax documents and things which don't relate to the specific assets which are being transferred, which may not be passed on, or the seller may not want to show the buyer. A key point is the contracts, and these are the contracts, arrangements, licenses, and other commitments relating to the business entered into by the seller, and these will remain to be performed by any party in whole or in part at completion. It is the most usual case that only the benefit and not the burden of the contracts are passed on to the buyer at completion, and I will go on to discuss any kind of third-party consents and transfers to contracts and arrangements a bit later. There will be the domain names of the business, which are the internet domain names associated, which a buyer will often want to obtain so they can use this moving forward. There is the goodwill of the business, and this is the benefit and advantage of the good name, reputation, and connection of the business. By transferring this from the seller to the buyer, this provides the exclusive right for the buyer to carry on the business under their name or the name of the business. Another asset is equipment and fixed assets, and these are fixtures, plant, machinery, equipment, and other tangible assets used or intended for use in connection with the business. These can either be physically attached or fixed to the properties at completion, or they can also include movable assets where relevant. It is often important that a list of these will be included within the document for clarity and to show exactly what equipment is being passed on completion. Intellectual property will also be an asset for some companies, and this is where there is specific creation or ownership rights associated with specific assets, and these come under the umbrella of patents, copyright, moral rights, trademarks, service marks, business name, design rights, and database rights. The IT systems of a business will want to be passed on at completion unless the buyer is going to put in place their own arrangements. This comprises of all IT materials and systems owned, used, or held for use by or in relation to the business. And these are things like computer hardware, including network and telecommunications equipment, mobile devices, data inclusive of databases, web pages, software, user manuals and object code and source code. Within the contracts I mentioned earlier, there will often be lease and hire agreements, and these are the leasing, lease purchase, or hire of goods or equipment for use in the business, which remain to be performed in whole or in part at completion. As these are normally for quite serious pieces of equipment or for quite large contributions of money, these often require formal assignment from the seller to the buyer. And there's sometimes a notice which has to be provided to the supplier as well to allow this for this to happen. These should be considered carefully, particularly when you are selling a business, as these often offer fixed terms. And if these are not to be passed to the buyer and are to be excluded, there will be some amount which is to remain payable after completion. The seller should also ensure that the supplier is happy for any equipment to be left with the buyer if there is going to be any transfer of leasing and hired equipment, as if not, the risk of the damage will lie with the seller. One key thing is stock, and this comprises of raw materials, supplies, work in progress, parts and components, as well as finished goods held, used, or owned by the seller in connection with the business as at the effective time. There will be a completion exercise to determine the value of these stock items, and this is usually done by an independent valuer who is agreed between the two parties, and the final determination of the price will then be put forward, and the buyer will pay that amount to the seller at some point after completion. Obviously, the specific stock included in with a business is dependent upon the type of business. One key asset will be property, and this is often broken into two parts. This is either freehold property, which is property owned outright by a person or business, or leasehold property is a property that is leased from a landlord by a business. If there's any kind of property leased, there will often have to be a license to assign, or there is the case where that lease can come to an end and a buyer can enter into a new lease upon negotiation with the landlord. There will be some third-party consents required, as I mentioned earlier, and this is a consent, license, approval, authorization, or other waiver from a third party who contracts with the business for the conveyance, transfer, assignment, or novation from a seller to buyer. One key thing to think about is any arrangement that will not automatically transfer from the seller to the buyer on completion. Either under the specific terms of that agreement, i.e. third-party consents are required, or if there's been any other agreement between the parties to exclude that particular arrangement. Where an arrangement is to be excluded, unless the seller wants to maintain it for use in some other business, they should seek to bring this to an end at or as soon as possible after completion. Care should be given to whether any arrangements have minimum terms, which could see the seller paying for equipment no longer required, especially considering things like lease and hire arrangements. Some arrangements, particularly regulatory ones with central boards, for example, pharmacy ones with NHS England and PSNC, or any care home transactions involving CQC, is providing necessary licenses or consents for the business to operate, will require some form of consent or notice provided to that supplier or board to transfer the arrangement to the buyer from completion. This should be arranged in plenty of time to assure that there are no timing issues on completion and the buyer can run the business as they want moving forward from the completion date. There are also two further assets which are often included, and these are creditors, which are trade debts and accrued charges owing by the seller to trade creditors of the business at completion, but these exclude any kind of excluded liabilities, which are often defined within the agreement. And there are debtors, which are trade debts and accrued charges owing by trade debtors to the business at completion. I'll now move on to briefly discuss some basic accounting provisions and how this works in an asset purchase agreement. Completion accounts are a detailed set of accounts made up by accountants with reference to the effective time of completion, and these are to be made within an agreed timescale post-completion. These are most often prepared for share sales and help to establish the exact purchase price of the shares where it has not been fixed prior to completion. For asset deals, where a full set of completion accounts is not required, accounting matters are often dealt with by way of a simpler apportionment schedule referred to in the agreement. This most usually occurs where the accounting processes of the business are relatively straightforward and or completion is timed on a completion date and at an effective time that provides a clean accounting break. Within this, there will be certain amounts of apportionments. Apportionments is a method of splitting up what is due to the seller and the buyer, with the cutoff point being the effective time. This can be agreed between the parties without the need for the accountant, although accountants, particularly the outgoing seller's accountants, who will be used to the normal accounting practices of the business and will have provided some previous accounts for the business, can assist to produce the statement of the advance receipts and prepayments, with the balance being payable to the buyer or the seller as appropriate. Advance receipts are used for the apportionment clause, and these are the amounts received, whether by deposit, prepayment, or otherwise, by or on behalf of the seller, relating to anything to be provided in the business by the buyer after completion. Any amount should be apportioned to the buyer as they will be operating the business at this time. In respect of prepayments, these are the amounts paid, whether by deposit, prepayment, or otherwise, by or on behalf of the seller, relating to anything to be provided to the buyer in connection with the business after completion. Any amount should be apportioned to the seller as they will have effectively already paid for matters that are for the benefit of the buyer post-completion. It's important to note that these exclude any liabilities in respect of tax. Effective time is a time, most often the opening or close of a business on the completion date, which is of particular importance as it is the cutoff points from which the completion accounts or apportionments and prepayment schedule are produced. It is often easier for this to therefore be on a close of business, so there is a clear demarcation line. Finally, in terms of book debts, these are the trade and other debts owing to the seller as at completion in respect of goods or services supplied by the seller prior to completion. These normally will stay behind with the seller, who gets the benefit of these. The schedule is often agreed within several days of completion, setting out the final position on book debts owed, and then the parties can agree on whether they would like it to be the buyer's responsibility to collect these money from third parties and forward them onto the seller, especially if they do not want any seller involvement in the business post-completion, or conversely, if the buyer are happy for the seller to collect these directly from any third parties following completion. Thank you for listening. And in the next podcast, Sophie will be moving on to discuss the elements of a share sale in more detail.
Thanks very much, Jonathan. Enjoyed listening to that. Very quickly for me, we release our webinars, podcasts and blogs on a regular basis, all of which can be found on our website, www.sintons.co.uk, should you wish to take a look. You can also follow the corporate team on Twitter at SintonsCoCo, at SintonsCOCO. As I usually say at this point, if you'd like to discuss anything Jonathan's raised today further, please don't hesitate to get in touch with him. You can be contacted via telephone 0191-226-7878. Or via email, jonathan.tutu@sintons.co.uk. Episode 4 will be with you in approximately 2 weeks' time. Thanks to everyone that is engaging with these sessions. We've been absolutely delighted with the amount of people that are tuning in and listening to them, and we're so pleased that they're adding value. Thank you very much from me. Stay safe, everyone, and we'll speak to you soon for episode 4.